World ID liftoff event, and I guess we'll get into Blue Origin's liftoff and landing as well. Brett, how do I know that you're not catfishing me?
Yeah, I think generally, so just to set the context here, last year AI bots wrote, or AI agents, AI chatbots wrote more written content than humans produced, and this year they're going to read more content than humans read. And you can see Cloudflare's CEO said a few weeks ago that actually bot content has now exceeded human content on the web. With that context, the idea that you can demonstrate that you are indeed a human within while using a service probably becomes more useful and valuable. And so World ID, previously known as WorldCoin, though there's still an attached coin, had an, call it partners event, where they announced a bunch of integrations with businesses who are seeing this as a real challenge for really the safety and security of their businesses and business models. So everything from, how do you know that the person that you're swiping right on or left on, I don't know which way you swipe, on Tinder is actually a person rather than a bot? So there's a verified human badge you can get on Tinder in Japan. They're rolling it out to the US. To, I don't know if you all remember, but there was, I think it was an Asian company where the controller for some set of funds was on a Zoom call with, you know, a half dozen or a dozen people, and wired tens of millions of dollars outbound after that call because the CFO had told him to do it. And as it turned out, he was the only real person on the call. Everybody else was a deep fake. So Zoom has announced an integration where you can verify that you are indeed the person you say you are, the human you say you are, on a Zoom call using World ID. And Reddit has announced that it's going to have verified unique humanhood on its platform, as well as a number of others. So it's pretty clear to me that this is something that we need. Now, is World ID the right solution? I think there's arguments for and against, but that's the general kind of landscape and way in which we approach it. And I think for, you can imagine there's certain business models where this is like business model endangering. If I offer a free trial out there and people can, the cost to create new accounts is basically falling to zero because I can have a bot create new accounts for me, then I'm just going to live in the free trial space rather than kind of actually becoming a paying patron. So that's I think the strategic logic behind this. And same with advertising. If I'm an advertiser, I don't want to, you know, there will be utility in advertising to bots, but the humans will be much more valuable advertising targets. And so kind of as a platform, making sure I have the actual humans identified should kind of increase the advertising revenue I can generate from partners. Nick, thoughts?
Nick, you volunteered to say that you're on the side of the bots here. So
yeah.
what's your take? Why are you pro bot, anti human verification?
Well, no, I think I am for proof of humanhood or personhood. I don't know what world. I think I've seen it in both ways, but the implementation of world itself to me just seems like it misses the mark. Like the idea that you're going to scan your iris because that is a unique signature to you, interesting conceptually. Like in practice, you tell me how many of your friends are going to go to a grocery store and scan their iris. There's like levels to the skepticism I have as well, and maybe I'll frame them as questions. One is, you know, for both of you, in most Western mature markets, it doesn't seem like a huge problem yet. Maybe this is just like a very far out, you know, issue. I get why.
I think it's a problem for people right now. So just on the first, the entire, I think, challenge with the project was that, one, they tried to go to emerging markets first.
Yeah.
And you're right, they have this extraordinarily complex, you could argue, over-engineered mechanism by which you prove you're a human. You have an iris scan that then gets fragmented into four separate encrypted pieces and sent off to four separate locations. And the whole idea is to give you a unique account that nobody else can get, with a mechanism by which if you lose access to your passwords or your device or things get stolen, you can re-verify in that that's your account. So that's the entire kind of like point of the architecture. But going to emerging markets, the regulator in the emerging market says, okay, well, I can understand how this might be useful, but what do I get out of this? And so being unwilling to, you know, basically bribe their way in, I think they had some regulatory challenges. Now, and 2 years ago, there was no real business demand for this, like you're saying, Nick. It's not like there's like a lot of reason 2 years ago to worry about this beyond whatever we were worrying about before, and we have cobbled together solutions that work. Now I think businesses are facing the reality that they are seeing lots of bots infiltrate kind of their platforms. Reddit explicitly said, kind of like, for some accounts, we're going to require them to verify as proof of human to try to clip out some of that bot traffic. Tinder specifically has a strategic interest in this because they're basically the quality of their service was being degraded by the fact that people could inexpensively create basically fake accounts. And the cost of creating fake accounts has collapsed. And so even for like a Google authentication, if the cost collapses, then imagine before you're like, well, is this a unique email address? And that no longer works because then people can just change the lettering of their email address. Now, is it unique email address and kind of like, is the zip code the same? And you have to create more and more of this complexity to try to prevent people from creating duplicate accounts. And it becomes this arms race with bots that can just navigate around that. And so then this has this can, you know, ostensibly just cut off the arm race at the very root. With its implementation.
Again, don't disagree on what you're saying.
You just think the implementation is different.
I think the implementation, like, there has to be an easier way to get people to sign up. There has to be something that is...
Sure. And actually, let me interject again, because the other thing... Yeah. The other thing that they announced, that they upgraded their protocol, and so you can verify in just with a face scan, with a selfie, as, like, a first layer of assurance.
Sure.
So you can onboard into this as a... And the way they're positioning it is, this is basically an account ID that is privacy preserving to which other credentials can be attached. So imagine you have to KYC into a financial institution. You can also attach your government, you know, ID into it. And so then you provide kind of this third party access to only what you authorize them to see. So it's like, this bank wants to see your ID. Do you approve that? Yes. And so then you don't have to again and again go through this. Okay, now I'm like showing my photo ID and showing my picture. And one of those assurances would be, and I have my, you know, I've had my iris scanned, and therefore I am verifying that I'm a unique human. And so then therefore I can use this to sign high value transactions or anything like that.
So I think the layered approach is super important, and because it makes sense already, right? So face ID, what
you, well you, I mean the layered the la- but the layered it's important, but it doesn't like what makes it then different than face ID or any
well
of
that's
the
what
other
I was about to say autom- so it's, so face ID is great if you're going into your phones and everything, but it would it be useful for Kathy to be world ID'd and then no one in the company ever gets tricked into sending something because you get a message from your CEO that says, I need you to do this right now? Yeah, that's probably worth more than a face ID. It's like, already if you're at home, I suggest people have their code word with their family or whatever,
yeah, family.
So that you don't get called and say, this person's been kidnapped, and you get tricked into sending money or whatnot. There's certainly, those are already relevant, and that was pre-deepfake for a penny world.
Right. Yeah, I think the way to think about the, has my iris been hashed and scanned and I verified in, is it's going to start out for those like higher value transactions. Think about now, imagine you're traveling and on vacation, you have your work laptop and phone with you, get stolen out of your hotel room. Like, how do we get re-access our corporate systems at that point? I think we call RFA and like try to convince them that, hey, you know, it's me. I promise I need a new laptop. I need you to give it the authorizations that I have. But how do they really know? Well, it's the person who's at the help desk on the other end of the line and whether or not I can persuade them. The cost of doing that persuasion has just collapsed. As in, there's somebody could reasonably like put together my voice, even my voice and video, call, you know, the service provider, just like with phone, you know, hacking. And so really and this is, they announced an AWS implement or integration that goes along this pathway in an Okta integration. It's like, what is the three FA? What is the third, the person never, like, can always be verified in way that they can prove that they are the account to which this set of authorizations belongs? And that's the at least initial, I think, high value promise here.
Nick, you're keeping your irises to yourself.
I mean, I feel like you are arguing a point, but then the reality of why WorldCoin solves this, I feel like you haven't really convinced me. Like, I get why there should be better authentication methods. I just don't understand why it's this one, this company. Like, to me, I looked at some of the numbers that came out of their event. They've had 18 million people verify with an orb across 160 countries. And they've used human credentials more than 150 million times, which means on average, they've used it 8 times, which is basically zero usage.
No, I 100% agree that there is very low penetration and very low utility. And that's the whole point. Like, as in, they try to do it as this circular economic mechanism where it's, we're going to go to end users, we're going to offer you some access to this token, this WorldCoin, that'll be the, you know, currency in our system. But there was no external pressure to cause people to want to do it other than FOMO on a crypto cycle. And now there's going to be external pressure, not just pressure, but businesses will proactively want users to do this because they have business logic that kind of compels them to promote it. So Tinder is attaching, I don't know, 5 boosts if you like verify in as a human. They're doing that because they think that their service is being degraded by the number of bots on there. And so they're trying to induce their users to do it. And then those badges will start appearing. And so then people just like will pay more attention to those accounts than ones that aren't verified. So there is a, it's kind of like you can't, if you have a circular system, unless you have some kind of external thing to prime the pump, it's not going to get started. I think there's reasonable evidence that from the business side, there's now kind of like motivation to prime the pump. And right now, yeah, there's effectively no utility. Though if you sign up, you get, I think, $30 in free DoorDash dollars. So there's, you know, there's that. Like, you can, if you can find yourself an orb, you can get a free lunch. Like, there's that. But worth other than it. That, it's not
find,
like,
find,
not,
find
not
a college
useful.
Campus and you got a nice user base.
Right. But why wouldn't Apple, Google, Meta, like, why wouldn't they just offer their own solutions? I already use Sign In with Apple on a daily, I use it probably 8 times a day.
Well, that's, I think everyone, ever. I think that is the secular trend is every single platform is going to need proof of human. And then the question is, how secure does it need, how deep does it need to go in terms of proving unique
like that Apple, how do you, we had an analyst who got basically his Apple account cracked and lost a bunch of money. Because that was the mechanism by which all of his other stuff was then penetrated, right? And so same with, like, if somebody gets access to your cell phone number, if you don't have good 2FA best practices, you could end up at that as a penetration vector to all of your stuff. When you're in that circumstance, then you need to be able to, one, simultaneously lock down all your accounts and then get to a re-verification mechanism that nobody else can get to. And that's the promise here. So I use Apple and I use Google and I use a 1Pass, you know, a password manager. And it's kind of a mishmash and it's kind of a nightmare. As in, sometimes I have accounts on one that I've used my email. Sometimes I have Apple. Right now I have 2 DoorDash accounts for some reason because of this very reason. As in, like, it's really not, I think, a very user-friendly experience that it's, Apple has its own kind of like trying to lock you into its ecosystem logic by which it's driving this stuff that makes it so that you can not do it independent of kind of like having that set of devices. And so there is, I think, like, real reason from the consumer acceptance perspective that you would have this third-party privacy-preserving layer that just serves as your store of kind of identity across these things. And it's, you're right that like people will mostly just do the default, which will be login with Apple and login with Google. And so there needs to be some kind of external pressure placed on the system to have them take this up.
What happens if my iris data is stolen? I can't get new eyes.
Yeah, so the way the orbs work is there is some check that it's actually a live iris that's being authenticated in. And so you can't just hold up a picture of an eye to get it. I think the vector for stealing it is probably not through the World ID system, where they're taking it, they're breaking it into four parts, and they're encrypted, and they're sent off to these disparate servers, hashed. The way in which it would occur would be, I don't know, somebody like getting up close to you with a camera and like taking a picture of your eye. I think it's like, is their system robust against somebody aggressively trying to hack and duplicate it? I think they think it is. I think that probably, but who knows? I mean, could we create a robotic eye that looks exactly like somebody's eye or something? I mean, there's all kinds of science fiction stories we could tell ourselves.
As far as you know, Brett, like the hardware, the orb itself, can this not just be done with a regular iPhone camera? Like, why? What are they packing underneath this orb? Like, it just seems like, is this a marketing
What's
stunt?
In the orb?
What's in the orb? Is it just an iPhone, like packed in like an orb?
No, because or else they would try to do it with that. As in, it's like a higher definition camera with a telephoto lens that then takes a very high definition picture of your eye. And I think that if the iPhone's cameras got powerful enough to do it, then that would be net good for them, because then anybody could like verify in via just an iPhone camera. If they could do that, they would do it. But
then everyone could do it, right? Like, because I'm just trying to understand like what makes this so unique, because to me it just seems like if it starts to catch on, you're going to have every player with larger distributions and already offer authentication just match with their own higher privacy standards.
No, they would be lower privacy standards. This has a strong claim to higher privacy, It's actually a very thin kind of layer that lays on top rather than being fully integrated into other systems. So conceptually somebody could be like, I mean, this is all open source. Somebody could be like, we're going to do World ID part two, just like somebody can launch Bitcoin part two or something, you know, and try to go after the same terrain. I think that there's conditional on there being some acceptance and it being built into businesses, then it becomes very difficult to displace. I do think that upon it being more universal, it'll be net better for people, that there's like a single standard you can all rely on that is the way that you're authorizations become portable and get kind of transmitted across, you know, various providers.
To summarize, I think we can all agree, one, we are very early in the proof of human.
There's more questions to ask here, Sam.
All right, then keep going. I was going to move on. We're already 18 minutes.
There's more questions.
Keep going.
Regulatory. They're banned in or suspended Brazil, Indonesia, Hong Kong, Spain, Kenya. Why would governments allow Sam Altman to scan your eyeballs?
Yeah, it's not Sam Altman. But again, I think it's like, a regulator in one of those countries, you could imagine, is kind of like, what's in it for me? Why don't I do this myself? And so depending upon the, call it, arrogance of their approach, they might have responded negatively to how they approached it. There is something, I think, people respond creepily to the idea that your eyeballs are going to be scanned. I think that's not like a instinct, even though, like, if you dig under the covers, it's like very privacy preserving, much more so than like posting your picture to social media is a massively, massively more dangerous thing than to sign up for World ID. Like, that is, you know, us appearing on this video, we're taking, I don't know, probably 10,000 times more risk than getting signed up for World ID.
That's why Nick's been talking in an accent this whole time.
So I think that there's no objective reason why you would say, oh, this is something that should be prevented from happening. And the reality is that, you know, regulators want to own kind of like their own consumer data. There's they are able to operate in the U.S. There's age restrictions even in the U.S., I think, as a result of European regulations on where they can do this, which to me seems silly and dumb. But it does, I think it's more likely to work regulatorily once there is, one, demonstrated problems for governments and customers if this isn't in place, and then two, it's in place in a way that's useful for people rather than, hey, this is some like science experiment that's done over here that doesn't seem to benefit, you know, any of the constituents of the actual regulatory government. You know, if banks in the geography are like, this would really help us, then the regulator is going to be much more amenable, whereas probably the bank's initial response was like, I don't want to have anything to do with this.
That's right. One 200 million wire to the wrong person, and all of a sudden you change your mind.
Yeah. And, okay, Nick, question. It's clear like that bots are going to be a big part of the consumption landscape here.
Yeah.
Are you worried about the health of the advertising ecosystem as a whole if we can no longer distinguish between bots and humans?
No. Because advertising systems are meant to work, at least in the digital world, on performance. If there are bots and you're not seeing the dollar, like the ability to track ad dollars in the, you know, on the Facebooks and these massive platforms is pretty great, right? Like, you know, as soon as a advertising campaign starts working, because you see the dollars flow into your business, just because there's millions of bots, you might have a campaign that goes rogue and, you know, advertises to bots, but you'll see the numbers. You know, it's called return on advertising spend. If your ROAS doesn't demonstrate high enough return, you're going to pause that campaain. You know that you're...
I understand for bot. Like the performance ad space where you are, say, a merchant that's trying to lead somebody into the top of the funnel to buy something, how that actually might even be enhanced by this because you'll be able to target specific bots that are doing those kinds of purchases. But what about the where I'm paying on an impressions basis? And kind of,
but
like
impressions are still like, you still have the granularity to track return on ad spend. Like, you still have the ability to understand how these impressions are turning into dollars, right? Like,
so you're just saying the numbers will go down, but it'll be fine. It's like,
the numbers will go down. And as a good advertiser, you reconfigure your campaign, or as a great platform, you reconfigure your algorithm, right? Like, why do you think Meta is going to surpass Alphabet in advertising dollars? It's because their algorithms are better, because people are converting better on Instagram than on search, right? Just because there's millions of bots and all of this like content being created really doesn't impact the advertising landscape. Or it could in a very short period of time, but then you reconfigure your algorithm to get to the human eyeballs, right? Like, your ability to be able to track your campaign is what makes these platforms so powerful. And there's really, like, when you break down the digital advertising landscape, it's like 70%, almost three or four companies, right? It's Meta, it's Google, that's 50% right there. Now you have Amazon with like $70 billion, and then a few other major platforms that do anywhere from like $1 billion to 10, and then there's, you know, some a bit larger there. So, like, yes, you could have, you know, the content explode from bots, and you could have accounts explode from bots, but your advertising, I think, business still stands because you will see it as an advertiser showing up in your bottom line.
But don't you think that, okay, so imagine you're going to have an explosion. I agree. It's like on our like rough modeling, there's going to be, call it a, I think it's like a almost 20x increase in the number of ad impressions effectively, as in kind of bots are going to be roaming all over everything. So then you're advertising, and kind of like if you're hitting a bot, there's an ad impression generated, but it's to a bot. And then the amount of consumer spend, it's going to inflect also because we think GDP growth is going to grow, but it won't, you know, it's not going to track ad impressions by any means. So you have a landscape in which the average ad impression, the cost of the average ad impression has to collapse, because you're massively increasing the number of impressions. Doesn't that seem like at the very least there's going to need to be tooling to kind of allow people to select for like the right ad impressions to a much higher degree? Or you think that that tooling already exists and it'll just scale up kind of like as ad impressions explode?
Well, it doesn't necessitate that the cost, the impression declines, right? Because the way campaigns are set up now, like if I wanted to run a campaign across Instagram, the way that it works is I allocate $100. I say, here you go, Meta, here's $100. Here's the advertisement I want to start running. And they run it autonomously. And they just continue to put it out there. They just take automatically from the $100. And then you can see and track your return on that ad spend. And if it's not over 2 or 3 or 4x, whatever your vertical standard is, then you just shut the campaign off. Right?
Yeah, like, but Nick, what you're saying is for the end consumer, it doesn't matter, but it's like Meta will reconstruct how they do it.
But Meta is continuously reconstructing how they do it, is the point. Like, it'll never really show up in the data in the way that I think you're saying, Brett, because it's like they are running these massive A-B tests at scale with all of these different advertisements, and they understand their user base. And so when these campaigns are put on by companies and businesses, it's already largely being run on an
I would hazard, I don't think that Coca-Cola is able to see like Coca-Cola spend change based on the impression ads it puts on.
Well, there's Meta. There's brand advertising, right? Like
that's what I'm talking about. I get it, but non-performance ad, basically brand advertisement, which is a big slug of like what brands try to do, that's going to have to totally like change, right?
But even on the brand advertisements, if you're advertising across Meta or YouTube, like you still can try and track your return on that ad spend. It's like, yes. It's not like it's a complete like, hey, here's $1 million, we're just gonna go like those days are gone. Like you have very good tracking capability across these platforms. That's what makes them so
well, you have good tracking capabilities to this is how many people saw the ad.
Yeah,
you have like I think for those brand ad campaigns, they're really
but like every going across ad you
multiple
see on
media, and they're like, you know, well, 2 years the from now, we're trying to increase our share.
Will you get a brand that just does terribly with humans, but for some reason all the bots love? It's like the first bot hit brand. It's like all the humans say, "Wow, I can't believe these stupid ads. This company's terrible." Meanwhile, their bots are out there buying all the items from them.
Yeah, I think even brand Maybe. Advertising, if you're running that on Instagram, it's still clickable. Like what ad are you seeing that's just like, you know, those are just bad ads then, right? Like those are not like
Should what you're saying is Nike marathon ad.
The difference between what you and I are saying, Brett, is like, I just think those ad dollars will just shift in performance budgets, right? Like everything should just convert to performance budgets because it's the most efficient way to be running advertisement. Now you can say like, yes, putting up billboards, doing all these things where you don't have the best, tracking.
At the margin. Yeah. I think ad dollars are flowing more towards performance budgets. And I think a thing that could happen here is this just means performance budgets dominate even more because you don't even know if you're getting in front of a human. But I do think there's an open question on.
That's why it's growing like 33% right now.
Right. 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 Like say performance budgets grow more. And I think that there's a utility. There's going to be a unique utility in advertising to humans, particularly at the brand level, maybe at the performance level as well, but definitely at the brand level that emerges here. That'll be interesting.
I actually think advertising explodes in the next 5 to 10 years. Because if you believe the other end of this, which is either, you know, bots take over the world or you get companies that are smaller and smaller and you have performance parity with feature sets and you can basically copy another person's business overnight, how do you then as a business stand out, right? Like, let's imagine all three of us have the same idea, right? And we all go and we only need one person to execute on this business and a bunch of bots. Right. So now we're all going after the same market. Like it's what you've talked about for a while, Brett, which is like you're getting to that solopreneur moment. How do you stand out as a business if your feature and your business itself can be copied? advertising.
Doesn't that mean brand marketing becomes more important?
But brand marketing flows into performance advertising. It's all like, yes, brand marketing becomes big. Like if I were, you know, someone should start a social media native brand marketing agency for all of these tech companies that are about to, you know, be spun up. Because
I think
to reach your customer.
Over time, advertising as a share of GDP it wavers, but it stayed relatively stable. And
like 2%.
Yeah, like 2%. And you could imagine, particularly in a business upcycle, I think it also tends to climb. So you could imagine heightened competitive intensity. And so then that driving incremental like spend ads, like you're saying. And I think that there's a, you know, reason it's been stable again across so many domains that I think it probably, you know, stays in that range. It could just move towards the upper bound here.
Yeah, I agree. I think it accelerates and then comes back down as two out of three businesses we start fail, right? Because I've outmarketed you and bought more GPUs and bots.
Right.
It's like where the dollar is going to flow now. It's not into labor. It's going into advertising and GPUs. That's it.
Yeah.
Simple.
All right. Are you done with your questions, Nick?
We moved on.
We're already over the 30-minute mark, so we may as well just keep going here. I'll just throw in, okay, to sum it up, and correct me if this is not the right takeaway. One, we're very early in proof of human. Two, it's going to become increasingly more important across everything to prove humanness. Three, the mechanism by which you prove humanness is up for debate, but world has just demonstrated, or at least at the liftoff event, some compelling business use cases that could provide interesting lock-in. There's certainly other players, Nick, to your point, that have massive distribution that probably will try to offer some layer of verification. And then separately, but relatedly, advertising probably going into a boom. The value of targeting to a human is important, probably more so on the brand side than on the performance side.
Yep. I would offer a fifth. I think that was four. Fifth is not just proof of human, but the ability to acclaim or to basically authorize bots operating on your behalf as a human and tie the actions of those bots back to the single unique account becomes increasingly important. Because like one thing people proof of human is actually, that's not the thing they're doing. It's proof of unique human. How do you make sure that, and this is a problem for businesses all over the place. Like I said, I have two DoorDash accounts. I don't want two DoorDash accounts. It's because of Apple sign-in plus Gmail sign-in. And DoorDash doesn't want me to have two accounts either. That's less efficient for them as well, because it causes confusion on my side, because it's like, you know, now I'm like, I have to cancel one, so I have to cancel DashPass. You know, it's like, they also want a good deduplication mechanism across their business. And actually, there's many businesses that do. So another thing they announced at the event is Bruno Mars, for his tour, is going to allocate a certain number of tickets to unique verified humans, because it's in his interest that the scalper bots don't take all the ticket prices and basically auction them off. If he was going to try to capture he could capture more value by doing that, by auctioning them off, but then it would only provide tickets to the rich. And he wants breadth rather than kind of like just hitting kind of like the people who can afford
Coachella crowd.
Yeah. And so to guarantee breadth, it's in his tour. If you are a verified human, you'll get kind of at least a chance to enter into that fairer lottery of getting tickets. And so that's strategic to him and a net better experience for the fans. And I think that kind of thing is going to be what, you know, I mean, if people like Bruno Mars, like they're going to sign up because they want to get access to tickets at a fair price rather than having to pay in the aftermarket. I think that will cause, you know, uptake. We'll see.
All right. And then the other liftoff event, Blue Origin. We now live in a world with two space companies that can reuse orbital rockets. So that's pretty incredible. Both of them US-based, also pretty incredible. The unfortunate part of the launch was The first stage did great, amazing, up and down. Second stage, not as good. And so the payload went into the wrong orbit. And it sounds like AST, Space Mobile, their insurance will pick up the bill, and they'll get there eventually. But very exciting for Blue Origin. And yeah, this is the next leg of the space race.
Has begun. Or actually, it began like a decade ago. It's just everybody else is beginning to start.
Exactly. It was. It's kind of like you can't have a race if there's only one person doing it. It was a space time trial, and now it's a space race because there's a second competitor.
All right,
Brett. We had a question from the crowd, which was, "What do we make of the new cities being deployed for Tesla's robotaxi, and why aren't they just expanding in Austin?"
You mean the Phoenix expansion or
the Houston?
Specify?
It was Houston and what was the other one? Dallas?
Dallas. My assumption is that there is some amount of learning that they have to do basically on good places to curb pickup and drop off on a city by city basis. And they can do it kind of like in a quasi kind of like we launched assets into the market and learn it all basis, but that they will have to do basically like pilot scale deployments and then scale from there. And so they've decided to begin to get it started because they see line of sight to scaling in Austin. That would be my guess. There's also, I was thinking Phoenix, because they're also building out charging infrastructure in Phoenix specific to robotaxi, which is a strong sign that they're going to try to scale aggressively. You don't need new charging infrastructure unless you are really trying to run a fleet that's of a reasonable size, given that Tesla already has service centers and charging in various spots. So I think net, these are all reasonable signs that they are going to try to like turn on the scaling lever here, and they better be able to because they're going to produce the Cybercab in some amount of volume this quarter and some larger amount of volume next quarter. So
can I offer an uninformed take? The reason they haven't scaled, the system is 99% perfect. I've talked about it. I have the new hardware for Model Y. 99% perfect. It can go from my driveway, back out of my driveway, all the way to the gym, park in a spot perfectly. Sometimes it just hallucinates routes. It'll just go off and make a right turn. Does the turn perfectly, but for some reason does not want to follow the map. And so maybe
have you ever ridden in a car with an Uber driver?
Yeah, one time I had an Uber driver drive on the wrong side of the road. And it was in the middle of the night. I was coming home late from a flight, and he drove on the opposite side of the road. And I just watched for a little bit saying, is he going to correct this? Are we going to get in a crash? Like, let's see how this plays out. I let it go for like a few minutes, and then I tapped him on the shoulder. I think he was dozing off. Yes, 100%.
Yes.
But maybe I think they are like the system is getting so good.
Have you ever taken a wrong turn?
Yeah, yes, of course. But you don't expect
they're not scaling because they're taking wrong turns. That's not why they're not scaling.
Well, it may be that there is a system bug that is more pronounced than I realize from my, daily driving with it. But it is odd, right? Because I'm watching the map, the GPS, it has the, highlighted blue line. And then it just goes, I hear the blinker and I'm like, wait, what are we doing now? Why are we going right? And then it reroutes and it figures that I just kind of let it go, but it'll add like 2 or 3 minutes. I'm not saying it's the worst thing ever. Like, look, if this is the worst problem, then they're in great shape. Because a year ago when I was using the old hardware 3 Model Y, and I think I, stopped getting updates, so I was on version 12, it was a liability for me to, not keep my eyes and hands on the wheel. Now I feel very comfortable, even if it takes me on a meandering route and adds a couple minutes. But it is kind of, I just wanted to bring it up because,
All right, well, we're down this rabbit hole anyway. Marketing is going to hate it because now we're rambling and the YouTube stats are going to be off.
No, now people in the comment comments are going to go, yeah, me too. I've noticed the same thing. And then Tesla's going to fix it and boom, it's going to scale.
Well,
all Brett, because we talked about it here.
Brett, did you see Elon's tweet on like Grok 4.5, this many trillion parameters, and then this many trillion, and then this many, and then AGI?
I mean, I did. I think that there's the trillion-dollar question in AI space is, what do you actually get when you invest billions of dollars into training these systems? And right now, Anthropic has demonstrated you can pass one threshold and you get lots of enterprise money. OpenAI and XAI are investing, actually, I think over XAI, it's less clear. Certainly over the medium long term, it's more clear. But OpenAI this year is investing more gigawatts into training than Anthropic is on publicly reported numbers. And what do you get out of that is you get these wildly performant models that can then do all kinds of stuff. And so I think that people are, even on Claude today, they haven't really come to terms with the fact that this is, that we're still on this pathway of these things are going to get better by like probably a similar amount, maybe even more so next year relative to how they performed this year compared to last year. And so I think that there is, that it's so early that there's the possibility that like XAI, which Grok model is not being used as much and certainly not monetizing as well, could very much catch up and surpass these others. And we'll see, there's reporting on kind of like the internal dynamics of the team and some shakeups there that suggest that they recognize they're behind and they need to shake things up. And I think that it's like early days. And these things are gonna get massively more performant.
It is crazy how good they all are now.
Yeah.
Right, and I feel we talk about this with Tesla in Europe. Right, they're just getting Robotaxi. They never had the bad version. And I feel like with all of these models, right, you go to one and you're like, wow, this one's so good. The other one is garbage compared to this. And this morning I had to do something and I went to Grok and I had it do something and it's just so good. And then I was like, let me see if these others can do it. And they're all just pretty amazing. And at the same time, most people are not using them, including myself, at any degree of their capability relative to what I see some people on X doing.
Yeah. Well, some people on X claiming they're doing. There's like a big difference between those two things as well. But
do you have a take on GStack?
No. So GStack is like a open source set of skills that I think Gary Tan made that then allows your model to operate successfully more autonomously and do lots of stuff, but I haven't tried it, so I don't know. Nor do I have a Clawbot running, which I think is probably where that becomes useful. So,
all right,
we'll see.
We'll end it there. It's short of 45 minutes. Thanks everyone for your time. We'll see everyone next week.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate, unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.